My guest today is Jakob Nordengård.
I'm a geographer and have a PhD in science and technology studies from Linköping University in Sweden. And I've written I think 6 books now about climate politics, energy, and geopolitics. And one of the books will be out April the 2nd, called Rockefeller Controlling the Game. It was initially released in 2019, but now it's coming out internationally. And I have written a couple of other books as well, covering more about climate.
Okay. And I was just saying before I hit record, I've been reading a preview of your book about controlling the game, and it's freaking fantastic. I think it's so interesting that you've spelled out how we got to where we are. For me, I'm so interested in the climate side of it. You spell out in great detail what happened in the 50s and stuff. And I have never seen this laid out in any way like this before. So I think I would encourage tons of people to read it. I think it's just excellent work. So congratulations on producing.
Thank you. Thank
you must have put a lot of work into this. Was it years, I guess, huh?
Yes, it is. It's like 15 years ago I started to work on this at the Linköping University as a PhD student. And I was just about to, I was supposed to write a short background chapter for my PhD thesis that is about European biofuels policy. But I just wanted to have five pages about the background to the climate issue. Led me into, I realized how important this was and how it was a totally different story that I found out about as I was doing this. So these 5 pages that was supposed to deliver, it went to 50 pages at that time. So I released this as a working paper. And that's the beginning of this, what eventually became the Rockefeller Controlling the Game book.
Yeah. So people from the outside, they might think at first they don't know anything about this. Oh, this is a conspiracy theory. This guy's making up some stuff about what he thinks is happening. But you went in and actually read real documents and real history to put this all together, right?
Yes, yes. I'm a researcher. I have a PhD, so I'm very thorough in documenting everything no speculation. I mean, I went into especially because one thing that I found out during this time I was doing this working paper, it was that one foundation popped out all the time. It was like the Rockefeller Foundation, and that intrigued me. It was just why would the Rockefeller Foundation? I knew I've studied energy politics before, knew about the influence of the Standard Oil Corporation and all. What came out of it, Exxon Mobil, and that was the other side. That was the enemy of those climate activists. So it was what? How could this happen? So one thing I did was to actually go back to the archives. The Rockefeller Philanthropy has excellent archives. They have covered all their doings since all the 20th century. So I went back and picked up, they have all their annual reports from 1913, and also I found out another philanthropy that they have, the Rockefeller Brothers Fund. They started in 1940. So I checked all these. I downloaded all these documents just to check how How had they been involved in climate? How did it start? How do they? And I also read a lot of biographies as well, because I wanted to know, in their own words, what they did. What did they want to achieve with this? Why was it important? And so on. So it's not. I have not wanted to speculate. I wanted to it's kind of more or less their story, but I just bring to life and put together.
Yeah,
I've
been into the climate debate for whatever 17 years, reading about this stuff all the time, and I found myself learning stuff on just about every page of this. Fantastic. And there's this whole thing where people on the other side, on the alarmist side, think that people like me must have big funding behind me, and that's why I'm saying what I'm saying. But I can see that it's very much projection, because there's all sorts of funding on the other side that, like you talk about in detail about 350.org, we're supposed to think that 350.org is just a bunch of plucky upstarts, whatever. But you're talking about they're funded by Rockefeller, right? They've had big money funding them, people earning six-figure salaries for them, things like that.
Yes, they do. And actually, at the Paris meeting, when the Paris Agreement was signed, they had this press conference with, and it's for Rockefeller Brothers Fund, together with 350.org. They sat there together, the oil money, Rockefeller Brothers Fund. I mean, it was standard oil money, but they were funded with, and 350.org. And it was a kind of a funny story, because at the time, if you remember, a lot of these more influential people, they said, oh, and the activists, they said, oh, this wasn't really a good meeting. It wasn't good enough. We haven't got that deal we really wanted. It's full of loopholes and everything. And but the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, we asked, oh, went quite well. Now we're just heading into the next phase of this. So it will take some years, but... So they were very satisfied because they knew a lot of this. And they actually were involved before the Copenhagen meeting, the COP 15, I think it was. After this, I mean, it was a disappointment. The activist did. It was a no. We didn't get the deal we wanted. What happened after this? It was. I mean, the Chinese weren't that. They didn't want to. We didn't agree on this. Some things with this. So what happened after this meeting? It was the Rockefeller Brothers Fund. They had so great contacts with China. so they actually did the negotiations with China to get, so they would get in line to strike this big deal in 2015.
So I think it's so interesting that normal people going through their lives, they think it's a conspiracy theory that there are rich folks out there that want to control all of our lives, that the globalists want to control our lives. But I think there's no way that anybody can read through this book of yours and conclude that there aren't rich people who are trying to control our lives. I mean, you spell it out so well.
Yes, I mean, and that's one thing of getting rich. You can't, if you don't have control over things in society, you won't get rich. You have to know what's happening. You have to influence politics. You have to influence economics, everything, in order to get rich and stay rich. Otherwise, you will lose your fortune.
So to kind of jump to the end, how do you think things are going right now for people pushing the Great Reset and the globalism? Because as I read through this all these decades, it seems like with the media the way it was back then, that they could get away with this much more easily than they can now. And now we have people like you openly writing about it and going on podcasts and stuff. And it seems like people are waking up, and it's harder for the Rockefellers to get away with this stuff now than it was even 5 years ago. Do you agree with any of that, or what do you think?
Yes, I think they are in a hurry to get things done. And one of the big things that's, I mean, I don't cover this in the Rockefeller book, because this it ends in like early 2020, the story, and about how the pandemic comes in. And so what's happening now is we have another process going through the United Nations system about a document called Our Common Agenda. And a big meeting that will be held in September this year called Summit of the Future. And that's huge. And that's what they want to achieve, something we call the Pact for the Future. And in that pact, we have all the packages with the climate, how to solve the climate problem forever or like. So they really, really want to achieve this. But this is kind of... they don't get another chance. This is, and people are really starting to know about these things. So, one thing is that they have, through the decades, just they have had the chance to operate without a lot of people knowing about it. But now it's much, much, much harder, and because information is everywhere. And we have internet, and that's one thing with I don't know if you remember this with the Global Risk Report that World Economic Forum put out. It was in January at their before their big meeting in Davos, and the Global Risk Report they have issued this since 2004. And often we find the climate change on top of it. And the climate change is a big risk, they say. But the biggest risk of them all is not climate change. And it's not, you could think about like we have this war in the Middle East. We have a Ukraine-Russia situation and everything. So it's a lot of things happening. But the biggest risk they see is disinformation.
I did see that. That's the biggest risk to them, right? That is
It is information. And we talk about malinformation as well. and that's correct information, but that can be used in a way that can influence people badly for them. It's like being caught with your hand in the honeypot. So, yeah.
So this makes me happy. So you are agreeing with me that there might be some panic internally, that these people, they're trying to sell us this stuff and they're seeing the way things are going. They're seeing this great awakening and they're not liking it. They're wondering how they can quash it.
Yeah. One thing, if you read my book, you can see how they have been involved in trying to influence and control opposing voices, opposing movements, and so on. That's a way, and they have been trying to do this now as well. But it's getting, because they don't have that much the power we have. It's just it's like the narcissist or the psychopath that gaslights and shouting out bad names and all these things. And that's a kind of, you expose yourself when you're doing that. If you just just calling people like they are right wing extremists and so on, and I don't think it works that good anymore. It might have worked before, but now it's getting harder and harder. So they don't have any more real cards in up their sleeves to deliver now.
So, how big a deal do you see it as the opening up of Twitter since Musk bought it? I don't agree with everything Musk says, but I think that's absolutely huge that we're able to speak kind of freely on Twitter, or more freely. What do you think?
Yeah. Musk is a kind of problematic man. He's doing a lot of other things that we can really question. So I don't know what the thoughts about this really are about Twitter. But it's good that we actually can come out with the information now. I think it's impossible to stop this. It's impossible to stop ideas from getting spread all over the globe now. So it's, I think it's an impossible thing for them to win in the end. The only option you have in that it is like making a totalitarian global government that takes care of everything and censor you, and eventually I think that's kind of a thing they want to achieve with this Pact for the Future, because that comes with the big censorship of the internet. More and less want to have a United Nations control over the internet. They define it as a global commons, and who will decide over global commons? United Nations, of course. And who controls the United Nations? So it's a lot of things happening at that level. But one other thing is you might try to control the internet if you get people to accept digital IDs and stuff, and if they we could come in the future and they say you can't use internet if you don't identify yourself. It will be impossible, and then all things you do on the internet, it's kind of that now, but if you have a digital ID, everything, every post, everything you have done all over the years, it gets connected. And you can, with a push of a button, just delete everything that this individual has ever posted. It doesn't exist anymore. So so that could be a thing with silencing in that. But somehow I think it has gone so far now. It's getting so hard to push this, because every step in this direction will get more people to question things, and I think that's what has happened the last years. They have one thing they are trying to do is like. This divide and conquer game all the time. When the pandemic came, it was a new kind of people that were, the doctors and everything, and with the war and everything. It was another step, but they also tried to create this opposition within these groups. And one thing that has been huge, of course, it's now in the Middle East, because it's a very, very sensitive. So they tried to split us with this things all the time, and that's one way reason. Everyone's eyes is on the conflicts now, Middle East and Russia, Ukraine, and very few are looking on what's happening on this supranational level with the United Nations negotiations. Hardly anyone is covering this, talking about this. The news and media don't mention this at all. So that's one thing. So. And that's what I am trying to do now is covering. I wrote all about this, the Rockefellers and the climate and all this, and also I've written another book about the pandemic and what happened with that, and then it will actually be out in August. But what I'm doing now is looking into this future meeting and what they are trying to achieve with this, and make other people look into it as well. Because one thing has been that they, I mean, if you control the media, if you control CNN and all big newspapers, you can just exclude these topics. But it doesn't take that much to actually. You just have to put into a few people this information, and it will starting to spread, like your channel, for example.
So I don't want to put. Don't want to put you on the spot here, but I'm wondering if you have any plans to produce some sort of an audible version of your book. So it's 450 pages or so in the copy that I have. And just the way that I consume books these days, I would absolutely listen to this. If you had somebody speaking it for hours, I would drive around and I would listen to it. But I'm less likely to spend the time. Actually, I just don't take the time, and I should, to sit down and carefully read through the whole thing. So do you have any plans to somehow make it available as Audible?
The thing is, it's Skyhorse Publishing that has released this book now. And they have done. It will be out in audio. So it will be released April the 2nd, tomorrow as well.
And that is fantastic news.
Yeah.
How actually it'll be on audible.com as a book or some other format? Or?
The thing is, Skyhorse didn't really inform me about this. So I just went into the Amazon page and found that, they're doing an audio as well. So you will be able to purchase it on Amazon.
Fantastic news. I'm going to buy it for sure. That's great news. Okay. Next question is, what do you think of this idea that the people trying to control us, they're playing 4D chess and they're so smart that they are actually controlling Joe Rogan and they're controlling Robert Malone. And those guys are controlled opposition. And they're very carefully letting Joe say some stuff and not other stuff. Do you think there's anything to that? Or do you believe that?
I think it can be, it's like this is a strategy as well. Yeah, you just, put out these rumors about people that, that guy is controlled. He is on the other side. So that people won't listen to the things that they say that actually are good. So, I mean, and I think it's the best way. And if we talk about real disinformation agents like the intelligence services have put out, I mean, it's like they have to say like 90% the truth and then 10% that's untrue. So if you know how to listen, you can actually find things and bits that are true that you can be useful.
Okay, yeah. I was definitely wondering how they would control Joe Rogan, and then what would he be saying if he wasn't controlled? It just seems like he's saying a lot of stuff that people... the elites wouldn't want him to say. Do you think the movie is going to have a little bit of an effect on the climate debate itself?
Yes. But I hope it will reach other people because it's like we have this people that has been into this for a long time, interested, and those are on board with this. We understand this. Fully. So the thing that the movie has to do is to be able to reach other people. But I think it will, and it's doing that, because one thing with the pandemic was that we had new critical people that had never been interested in climate science. It was not their topics. Doctors weren't interested in people's bodies, not in the natural world. And so those people, and that was very obvious for me, because I mean I have been very much into the climate science, for climate history, and all these things, and also have a lot of contacts with researchers, scientists from that side. This Rockefeller book, I mean, it was out in Swedish in 2019. And then first, I remember this, my release party, and it was most old men, those who have been interesting, retired climate scientists and so on, but has been angry about how they've been treated in academia. And so they bought my book, No Women, where were very, very few, some. We had the pandemic, and this started a chain reaction with a lot of other people that had never, never, ever thought about these things before. They bought into the whole story, but when the lockdowns and every strange authoritarian things happened, they started to, what is this really? And so a lot of new people bought my books, and then I also released a book about the pandemic that was a huge success in Sweden. So it was suddenly a lot of more people, and women as well, starting to be interesting and read this. So I think, I mean, I remember the great global warming swindle when that was released. What year was it?
2007, I believe.
It was very, very early. It was exactly the time that I started to look into to climate science and became interested and skeptical. So it has had an importance for me at that time. But people kind of forgot about that. But now with this movie, it comes in the just about time. And so we have a newer generation, actually, haven't really known about these things. So I think it can have an impact on them, and they can spread it even further to other people.
That makes me so happy to hear you relate that experience. That parallels so many other people where they're saying the whole COVID thing, it was horrible, but so many people now are asking questions that they weren't asking questions. I hear that over and over, and that's such a silver lining to the whole thing. I really do think the Great Awakening is happening, and I think the Rockefeller types must not be liking this at all, which is great.
Yes, because I mean, they have shot themselves in the foot. I mean, it's when you do it too hard, I mean, it starts the opposing force gets so and you can't beat that. Yeah, and it gets harder and harder to control that side of it.
They for sure overplayed their hand. And I may have asked you this before, but say the climate narrative does crumble and the pandemic narrative has crumbled. What's next up? They're not just going to give up. What's the next narrative that you see coming up?
The UFOs. I mean, it's like, I mean, that's has been up for a long, long, long time. and suddenly it has been tolerated to discuss these things. And so I wouldn't be surprised at all. But otherwise, I mean, the climate is such an important thing. I mean, it's the backbone of the agenda. I mean, it's connected to everything. And as I mentioned in this, it's the Rockefeller Brothers Fund. They released an annual report in 2005. And they just told in this report what kind of subjects climate touches upon in the world. And it was kind of, they concluded, climate touches upon everything. And therein lies our opportunity. they wrote this. So it's so important. I mean, if we lose this, they can just, next step is UFOs or being using authoritarian methods that will just make, I mean, it can't succeed. It will just collapse, I think.
I've asked other people this question, but do you think that these people really had the dream that they were going to fool us and we're going to end up eating bugs and not flying, no private cars, we lived in 15-minute cities, all this other stuff? They really thought they were going to force this down our throats and the people were going to roll over and take it? That's a dream they had, right?
Yeah, it's a dream. And I think it's something, a dream that you can have if you, I mean, we talk about filter bubbles. I mean, and some of these people have been living in their own little bubble with and been around other people that it has just, yes, this is the way we're going to create. This is the future we want, and we're going to create it as well. So I think it's a it was a kind of surprise for me to actually I mean, just as the Paris Agreement was signed, the same day they agreed, Klaus Schwab came out and an article was published in Foreign Affairs about the Fourth Industrial Revolution, which just is just put the agenda out there. It was just everything. and I think it's like... they just assume that, I mean, we have been working with this for so long. This is the perfect answer to all this. And as they have just talked to each other about this, it's just like, no matter, but people will just accept it. Because, and I think it's also kind of hubris, because it has worked before. I mean, they actually fooled us with a lot of things before. So why wouldn't we get away with this time again? And then they tried to also to influence everything and this opposition that they understood it would be opposition. It would. But if we just take this, control these opposing forces and just get the spotlight to lunatics, ordinary people will think that we are the people that are sane when they actually are insane. So that is not the strategy. As we can see now, it doesn't work that way. It was a kind of confusing a time, and I think they became with COVID. It was like a push because they wanted to recreate the system, the international system. So they had to have this push, and when people were kind of or scared of this, it would be easy as to put the next piece in the puzzle in. So
I just found some polling data actually in the last few days that backs up this idea that the elite, self-described elite, live in a crazy bubble. They have no idea what real life is like. Mm. Like, there was a list of things to fight climate change. Would you favor banning each of the following? 80% of Ivy League graduates said, yep, let's ban gas stoves. 81% said ban gas-powered cars. 70% ban non-essential air travel. And then 68% of those people said, let's ban private air conditioning in order to, prevent bad weather. Yeah. But then they have the same polling for real people who actually live in the real world. And the support for that crazy stuff is just on the floor, that real people don't believe in this stuff. So, yeah, yes. I think it's a great point that they're living in this bubble and unconnected to the reality that the rest of us live in. Very important point.
Well, you have to be really well educated to believe in the propaganda. Jacques Ellul, this French philosopher, He wrote a book called Propaganda. He also wrote The Technological Society, which is his most famous book. But in Propaganda, he said that we are now on the verge of developing a propaganda regime in the West, that it's kind of, it will be more or less like the same as in the communist world. But he also said that those who are most likely to accept propaganda, it's the well-educated people. It's the ones that are in the middle class and striving to get one step up. Because those people want to be a part of a discussion. They want to be a part of establishment and to have established views. It's a kind of I'm not one of them. I'm actually a part of this knowledge people that have something to say in society. So propaganda was never about trying to reach this. Poor people, the losers, never interested in them. You have to reach this, and that's where one thing with getting everyone into the education system, and in Sweden, it's I remember when I was going for school and everything. I mean, it wasn't just obvious that we should go on and study at the university. We could just take a job at a factory or something. But suddenly, when I was like 25, it was suddenly they closed down all the factories and everyone would supposed to go to the universities. And that's when we all the insanity came into universities. So they wanted us to be educated or indoctrinated for accepting the new society.
So you mentioned that you have to be educated to believe in this climate scam stuff, for example. And Richard Lindzen had a great related quote. He said, "Ordinary people see through man-made climate fears, but educated people are very vulnerable." I think that hits the nail right on the head. Yeah. I think it's way easier to sell it to people who have education. Yeah. Another question is, do you think it's just a natural state of affairs for humans that there's a small group of people who see themselves as elite and they seize the money and the wealth because the little people are too stupid to make their own decisions? Do you think what's they're trying to do right now, it's the same thing that happened in medieval times or similar type of idea, do you think?
Yeah, I think. We just have another type of technology now. But we are the same people. We're the same kind of people. And we have a few clique that is striving for power and fortune. And we have always had this. So it's nothing new. And it's like they are trying with the new technology they had wanted to achieve a new feudal system, techno feudalism. Yeah. So it's but it's nothing new.
There probably is an important point there too that people are the same. I just heard someone else say that if you took a caveman baby from 30,000 years ago and dropped them into a modern household at the age of one day, that kid would grow up and just be like a normal, you would not be able to distinguish that kid from someone who was born normally at this time. Do you think people are kind of the same as they were tens of thousands of years ago? Yeah.
I think we have changed that. We have a lot of studies about that. I mean, it takes a long time to change a species if you don't do it on with transhumanism and all these ideas that they have.
Okay. Any other points you'd like to make? This has been fantastic so far, but anything else you'd like to say?
I don't know what I haven't said. But yeah, it's also a lot of things that is happening and so on. And I think, what I'm doing now, I'm actually as I said, Rockefeller book will be out tomorrow, and then they have this this other book that's possible to pre-order now as well from Skyhorse. It's called the business in Swedish, Globala Statskuppen. It's the global coup d'etat in English, and then Skyhorse will release it August the 6th. And then I also have two other books that I one about called The Digital World Brain, and that's about the system that they eventually want to create, that they want to come out of this, all these crises that we have been a part of for the last couple of decades. So that's the grand solution. And so that The Digital World Brain is about United Nations and the reform work that they are working with at the moment, and they want to conclude with the Summit of the Future in September. And then I have actually a new project as well that I'm working on, because all these books are written now. So now I have a book called The Temple of Solomon. That's look into more of an occult ideas that are into this agenda, because I've always seen that we have had it wasn't just about the climate. It was very obvious for me when I made my PhD, but it was some of these people were involved in very big influential think tanks. They had occult leanings. They had occult ideas that they put into this about how a future society would evolve. I mentioned some of this in the Rockefeller book. For example, Pierre Thiers de Chardin and Oliver Reiser and their utopian world society that they had wanted to achieve. So the Temple of Solomon book looks into this, and also and the title comes from actually this professor Oliver Reiser, but he said he wrote a book about how can we create a new Temple of Solomon. So that's, I remember working with this and hope to be finished late this year with that.
I was just curious, have you had any connections or conversations with a guy named Dave Collum, the Cornell professor? He's on a lot of podcasts. I think I would love to hear you two discuss some of this stuff. I think that would be great. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I have to check him out. I hadn't really, I don't think I've heard his name before.
Okay. And then one other question is, you started out publishing, I guess, just in Swedish and now more in English. Any other languages coming? I'd love to see lots more people reading your stuff and listening. Yeah.
The Rockefeller book, actually, the first other language it was translated to was Polish. So it came out in Poland, I think like 3 years ago. And it was a huge success in Poland. It sold a lot. And so I think that when my book, the most watched clip with my book mentioned is from Poland. I think it was like 6 million or something. It was just, what? I had no idea. But suddenly I got kind of a royalties from Poland. And I just, okay. And then in Poland, they have also released this global coup d'etat. And also in France, the Rockefeller book actually was released in September last year. And now it will go. It goes through my publishing house in USA, Skyhorse. So that's if someone wants to release my books, it goes through Skyhorse nowadays.
Okay, excellent. Yeah. I'm so glad to hear all of this. Any other final points you'd like to make before we go ahead and wrap this one up?
Nothing that I have in mind.
Okay. All right. Well, Thanks again for all your great work. I'm a huge, huge fan of what I've been reading recently. So thank you very much. We'll talk to you next time. Jakob Nordengård.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right.
For having me on. Yeah.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.